I have a buddy named Ray Briers, and he owns a company called ThePipeYardInc.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it, rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe pile, sign pole, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com, 409-788-PIPE, 409-788-PIPE. For years, I've been bragging on the team at Allied Outdoor Solutions in Houston for the beautiful work they do to make your outdoor area, your backyard, look like a resort. Well, their business has just grown and grown organically because they do great work. Your walkways, the area around your pool, your outdoor kitchen, all of that. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. And now, over the years, it's taken 20 years, they're now in Austin, Dallas, and San Antonio. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. 844-846-1010. Call them at 844-846-1010.
It's that time. Time. Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
Joe Biden in 1988. Ramon, do you have that audio, Sam Donaldson? In 1988, most of you won't remember this because it's 34 years ago and I'm a nerd for politics. Joe Biden was running for the Democrat nomination. And he'd been in the Senate at that point for 16 years already. He had to drop out of the race, but it wasn't just that he dropped out of the race. You remember when Jonathan Edwards... Was it Jonathan Edwards? John? Wasn't it John Edwards? What was the guy's name? From the plaintiff's lawyer from South Carolina, North Carolina, that Rush Limbaugh used to call the Breck. What was it? John Edwards? John Edwards, not Jonathan. Jonathan Edwards was sinners in the hands of an angry God. It was John Edwards. When he got out of the race, he had a mistress named Riley, and she'd had a baby by him, and it turns out he was carrying his whole second family and living this whole life, and he didn't just exit the race. He exited public life. Then you had Mark Sanford in South Carolina. Remember, he went missing because he was with his mistress. And they asked his press secretary, where is he? And they, oh, he's hiking in South America. Well, the only thing he was hiking was his mistress. And Well, when Joe Biden left office, it was so ignominiously that nobody ever believed he'd run for national office again. He wasn't going to do anything else other than be a senator, and he was going to be a senator from Delaware for the rest of his life. But nobody ever believed he would run again. You have the report? Here was the report. I want you to listen carefully. What happened was Joe Biden would make up details of his grandiose accomplishments, and people started tracking them down. And it was all lies. And he was plagiarizing. He was plagiarizing a speech by Neil Kinnock. Now, this was pre-internet. People didn't have computers and internet and quotes. Today, you can take a clip out of anybody's speech, put 15 words in a row, put them and Google it, or whatever search engine you use, and it'll show up that that's this speech. It'll put you in that part of a speech or a Bible verse or a movie or a story. Back then, you could plagiarize without getting caught unless somebody knew the original source. The problem was he was using word for word a labor leader in England, Neil Kinnock. Neil Kinnock is famous for getting his ass beat by Margaret Thatcher. But he was plagiarizing Neil Kinnock's labor speech, his go, rah, rah, union speech. And people started noticing it because there's a transatlantic part of the press that actually follows both sides. And somebody started pointing it out. Well, once they started digging, they found out this man's a complete fraud. So here was the story of him losing and leaving the race. And I will tell you, when this story came out, I remember it like it was yesterday, plagiarizing Joe Biden. Nobody ever, at the time, nobody believed he would be back on the national stage again.
Biden may have more explaining to do.
The new questions stem from taped remarks of Biden during an April campaign appearance in New Hampshire.
I went to law school on a full academic scholarship, the only one in my class to have a full academic scholarship. Went back to law school and, in fact, ended up in the top half of my class. I was the outstanding student in the political science department at the end of my year. I graduated with 3 degrees from undergraduate school and 165 credits, only need 123 credits.
Biden now concedes he did not graduate in the top half of his law school class, that he does not have 3 degrees from college, and that he was not named outstanding political science student in college.
Newsweek says Biden actually went to school on a half scholarship, ended up near the bottom of his class, and won only 1 degree, not 3.
Joe Biden ranked 76th in a class of 85 at the University of Syracuse Law School. I mean, this guy comes off this whole thing as a flyweight.
Now Biden says Newsweek is right. His memory had failed him.
And I'd be delighted to sit down and compare my IQ to yours if you'd like, Frank.
Joe Biden was victimized by the truth.
Bye-bye Biden. He may not know it yet, but I think this is going to be very difficult for him to recover it.
Is Joe Biden dead meat, yes or no?
I think so.
Bob.
In terminal condition.
Terminal. Eleanor.
Yes, unless he comes in third in Iowa.
Morton.
Dying.
I say dead.
The man is a repeat liar. This precedes his dementia. Here, for instance, is Joe Biden lying about his involvement with the civil rights movement.
I got elected to, I got very engaged in my case, in the civil rights movement. And as a kid, I worked a lot in the movement. And I got deeply involved in the Democratic Party because the Democratic Party in Delaware was a Southern Democratic Party then. We were more a Southern state than a Northeastern state. And I got involved, and one thing led to another. And one day a group came to me of the senior members of the party and said they wanted me to run for the Senate.
That's a lie. Even CNN's Jake Tapper had to call him on that lie.
He lied to voters, according to the New York Times, quoting aides of Biden's, about having marched in the civil rights movement. This is Biden making this false claim in 1987.
When I marched in the civil rights movement, I did not march with a 12-point program. I marched with tens of thousands of others to change attitudes.
And the New York Times reports, quote, more than once, advisors had gently reminded Mr. Biden of the problem with this formulation. He had not actually marched during the civil rights movement. And more than once, Mr. Biden assured them that he understood and kept telling the story anyway. That is really, really weird.
He's a pathological liar. If you know anything about that personality type, read, there's a lot written. They believe what they're saying. You can tell them it's not true, but they've said it and they believe it. They can't stop. Look, Joe, you weren't there at Selma. You weren't at Woodstock either. It's okay. There wasn't enough room on the bridge for everybody. You were not there and you're lying. And it's easy to disprove. The man is a compulsive liar. Here's 20 times, we could do 50, that Joe Biden lied about being a civil rights activist.
When I marched in the civil rights movement, I did not march with a 12-point program. I marched with tens of thousands of others to change attitudes, and we changed attitudes.
He lied to voters, according to the New York Times, quoting aides of Biden's, about having marched in the civil rights movement.
I got involved in the civil rights movement.
I got involved in desegregated movie theaters. They organized voter registration drives. From the time I got involved as a high school kid in the civil rights movement.
But I was a kid involved in the civil rights movement, desegregating restaurants and movie theaters in my state.
From the time I got involved as a kid in the civil rights movement. Sit-ins and desegregating restaurants.
And I got involved in the civil rights movement just as a kid.
And that's why I got so deeply involved in my community with the civil rights movement.
When I sat in black churches on the east side of Wilmington getting ready to, and by the way, next to two Jewish rabbis, getting ready to go out and desegregate movie theaters in Delaware.
I come out of the civil rights movement.
I started off in the black churches and we'd go from there to desegregate movie theaters.
For real, I got involved in the civil rights movement. From the time I've been 18 years old, I've been involved in causes from the civil rights movement.
Got involved in the civil rights movement and desegregating restaurants, that kind of thing.
Coming out of the civil rights movement and being involved in the Jewish community as a kid in the civil rights movement.
I got involved in the civil rights movement.
Getting ready to go out and desegregate restaurants and movie theaters.
This is what got me involved in civil rights as a kid.
I got very engaged, in my case, the civil rights movement.
Quote, more than once, advisors had gently reminded Mr. Biden of the problem with this formulation. He had not actually marched during the civil rights movement. And more than once, Mr. Biden assured them that he understood and kept telling the story anyway. That is really, really weird.
This is
The Michael Barry Show.
Well, my friends are gone and my hair is gray. I ache in the places where I used to play. And I'm crazy for love, but I'm not coming on. I'm just paying my rent every day in the Tower of Song. I said to Hank Williams, how lonely does it get? Hank Williams hasn't answered yet, but I hear him coughing all night long.
Interesting documentary on Netflix about Leonard Cohen, if you are interested. It's not just about him. It's about the song Hallelujah, which, of course, he wrote. It took him over 20 years to write it. And he has over 30 notebooks of verses he wrote for the song and how that song went from being his song to then John Cale. They did a tribute to Leonard Cohen, and John Cale recorded that song. And so for many people, Hallelujah was a John Cale song. And then this guy, I think it was Tim Beck, been around for a long time, had a son. And Columbia refused to record, or refused to release Hallelujah. So when the album Various Positions was brought in for ready for release, Letmakoff, I think is the guy's name, said, this is trash. We're not releasing this. So they didn't release it. So it was only released abroad, and they scrambled to find a small publisher who would publish the album. And Hallelujah was kind of the star of this album. So years go by, and the album is unreleased, but Bob Dylan has discovered it, and he loves it. So John Cale records it for the tribute album to Leonard Cohen. And then Jeff Beck discovers the John Cale version, and Jeff Beck is performing it. And Columbia has Jeff Beck under a 2-record deal. This is 10 years later, and Columbia releases the Jeff Beck album with Hallelujah, which went crazy. And then Jeff Beck drowns. So that gives this whole bit of glitter to the song. And now it has a sentimentality to it. Jeff Buckley. I'm sorry, not Jeff Beck. Jeff Buckley. And so when Buckley dies, and it takes on, and then Bono sings. And all these different people pay, and they're paying tribute to Jeff Buckley and this song, not realizing it's actually a Leonard Cohen song. And then the song just takes on its own life. And then Leonard Cohen, who's always struggled to catch on, once he hits about 70, partly because of this song and partly just because he hung around long enough, all of a sudden he makes his comeback and he's the hottest thing. And so all his money has been stolen by his business manager. He starts from scratch, and he's more popular than he's ever been before. Anyway, if you like music documentaries, it is a really, really good music documentary. So we're back to playing this game with your money that the federal government does. So we've got Republicans in charge of the House, Democrats in charge of the Senate and the White House. And it's time, they've blown through the debt ceiling again. There is absolutely zero restriction on spending in the federal government. This is unsustainable. You cannot continue like this. And no one wants to face it. Anyone who does face it is made immediately unpopular because everybody wants their portion. What did de Tocqueville say? The American system will work until the people realize they can vote themselves a raise. But where does it come from? It's flimflam. It's illusory. It's out of the air. Where is this money coming from? And it just keeps growing. And the Republicans are just as bad as the Democrats, to be clear. So now here we are. It's time to raise the debt ceiling again. And Republicans used to say, we're not going to do under Obama, we're not going to do this. And then they would. Well, okay, but we got some. Now they admit, we're going to do it. We're going to get some concessions for it. Well, let's go back to the last debt ceiling, when the debt ceiling was a big deal. Here's John Boehner. Once he got his debt ceiling increase, he said, yeah, we're going to give it to him this time, but we're not going to do it again. I'll tell you that. We're not going to do it again.
Yes, but allowing America to default on its debt would be irresponsible. But it would be more irresponsible to raise the debt ceiling without taking dramatic steps to reduce spending and reform the budget process. When the time comes, I will again insist on my simple principle of cuts and reforms greater than the debt limit increase. Now, this is the only avenue I see right now to force the elected leadership of this country to solve our structural fiscal imbalance.
Oh, yeah, we're gonna force them. We're going to give them everything they want, but I tell you what, we're going to teach them. You can't just keep doing this. Then Senator Tom Coburn put this into perspective, and I think he's dead right.
But the real question is what's the greatest threat to our national security? Is it Al-Qaeda or is it our debt? And I would proffer that it's our debt. In terms of the thing that will take this country down is not Al-Qaeda. It is spending money we don't have on things we don't need and creating a debt that will totally shackle our children.
You know Republicans are in a bad position when Sheila Jackson Lee was bragging that they had the debt ceiling increased.
When we present ourselves as Democrats, we have to say that we won this. American people need to know what was on the table. Cutting Medicare, cutting Social Security, cutting Medicaid, and throwing students out of colleges because Pell Grants were not protected. Know what you were going to lose and know what you were able to save. The president was in that negotiating room more than anyone else, I wonder why, and had to maintain a certain battleground form that said, over my dead body, will you do this? And certainly, we don't want anything to happen to our president. He had to stand his ground.
We should cut welfare. We should cut entitlements. We should, as she says, throw some students out of college with their Pell Grants. If every graduate of a high school in this country goes to college, and much of that comes from government funding, that is socialism. Any nation so established, that is socialism. I have had this conversation more times with people I think should know better. Remember, not every kid needs to go to college. Some kids need to go into the military. Some kids need to go to vocational school. Far more need to go to vocational training than currently are. Far fewer need to go to university than currently are. That's just a fact. We should not have so many young people going to college. This is not progress. What do you think they're going to do when they get out of college? College is mostly what would be called a liberal arts education. Thinking, talking, communicating, writing. We don't have that much absorption in our economy for these sorts of things. And we don't have enough people who know how to turn wrenches, fix air conditioning, sweat pipes, build, construct. inflation is wrecking our country right now. It is, you feel it. You feel the pinch. You know, a school shooting makes headlines. They, in my opinion, very tastelessly, cruelly show the faces of the anguish of the family members as they cry outside the school. It's easy to bring about change. It's easy to get people to understand something went wrong. You can even convince people that we need a national gun control or some national this or national that because this guy went crazy. It's easy to manipulate people using a news story like that. Inflation is like a very slow-growing cancer in a part of the body that doesn't get checked. And it just consumes slowly but surely. I've gone back and started watching a series. It's on Netflix. It's Milton Friedman. And it's called Free to Choose. And he attacks the issue of inflation and explains it better than you'll ever hear anyone else. There's only one other person I've ever heard explain it, and it's one of his acolytes, and that's Thomas Sowell. There is an entire episode on inflation, which I'll gel down for you, but we're going to play a couple of Milton Friedman clips for you. Friedman points out that inflation is entirely a creation of government. You cannot cause inflation. I can't. We can do a lot of things as individuals, but we cannot create inflation. Inflation is created when there is too much money in the economy. Too much money means there is an oversupply of dollars, but you don't increase production. So if there's one car on the lot and I want to buy that car and I go up and the dealer wants to sell it, I might have a little wiggle room depending on how much he needs the money. Might be able to negotiate with him to get him to drop the price because I may be the only buyer this week for him. But when the guy next to me wins the lottery and he wants that car, he'll come in and tell the dealer, and that's the only car. Hey, I want that car. I'll pay $1,000 more than he will. Well, immediately I either lose the car or I have to pay more. But if there's a third guy that comes in and he just got a big pay raise and now he wants a car, add a fourth guy, add an eighth guy. Well, that's what inflation is. Inflation is too much money in the marketplace driving the prices up because the value of money decreases. Where the inflation pinches is the people who aren't now making more money. Their cost of living adjustment does not increase sufficiently. I just listen to Milton Friedman.
Inflation is a disease. It's a dangerous disease for a society. It is sometimes a fatal disease for a society. It's a disease that, if allowed to rage unchecked, can destroy a society. And we have many such examples. The classic examples, of course, are the extreme examples of Germany, of Austria, of Russia, after the First World War, when inflation really did reach levels at which the kind of apocryphal story I told you was a literal description of the reality. When inflation reached levels at which employers would pay their workers three times a day after breakfast, lunch, and dinner so they could go out and spend the money before it lost all its value. That's the real extreme cases. But you don't have to go to such extreme cases to see the enormous harm which inflation left unchecked can do. You have the example in many examples in South America. Brazil, before 1964, was brought down by an inflation that led to a revolution that toppled the existing government in order to stem the inflation. In the famous case of Chile, with Mr. Allende in power, he produced an inflation, which was one of the major factors that caused the economic catastrophe that led to the replacement of his government by a military dictatorship. We are nowhere near that stage in the United States. Now, the first step toward understanding the cause of inflation is to recognize that it is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. It's always and everywhere a result of too much money, of a more rapid increase in the quantity of money than an output. Moreover, in the modern era, the important next step is to recognize that today governments control the quantity of money, so that as a result, inflation in the United States is made in Washington and nowhere else. Of course, no government any more than any one of us likes to take responsibility for bad things. We're all of us human. If something bad happens, it wasn't our fault. And the government is the same way. So it doesn't accept responsibility for inflation. If you listen to people in Washington talk, they will tell you that inflation is produced by greedy businessmen, or it's produced by grasping unions, or it's produced by spendthrift consumers. Or maybe it's those terrible Arab sheiks who are producing it. Now, of course, businessmen are greedy. Who of us isn't? Trade unions are grasping. Who of us isn't? And there's no doubt that the consumer is a spendthrift. At least every man knows that about his wife. But none of them produce inflation, for the very simple reason that neither the businessman, nor the trade union, nor the housewife has a printing press in their basement on which they can turn out those green pieces of paper we call money. Only Washington has that printing press, and therefore only Washington can produce inflation.
You've got
The Michael Berry Show.
You're on the Michael Berry Show.
Hello, Michael Berry.
Yes,
this
ma'am.
Is Teresa. Yeah, I heard about some subjects that I want to talk about, if I may.
Okay.
The first one is that about a year and a half ago, I heard this man on the media. He said, don't call the children kids because kids is a calf. And then I don't know if it was the same man around the same time. He said, don't call brothers and sisters, siblings, because they're trying to make the family less, you know, kind of separate the family or something, he said. And then I heard in my mailings, you know, that the American Indians, you know, the leader years ago, he okayed the reservations because he didn't want his people to die. And so I think the leader of Ukraine should do the same, because that way his people won't be dying. And also about the Bible says, you know, pray for your leaders so you can have peace. And the president of Trump, you know, and maybe if he would have forgiven the immigrants that had been here for years, he probably would have won. I think that's what he lost. In my opinion, that's why he lost, because maybe he was too busy or something, and he forgot about the immigrants and been here for such a long time, and so the Democrats won. So you know, now that President Biden is our leader, it's too late to do anything. We have to pray for our leader, says the Bible. So that's what I'm trying to do. Because not enough prayed, that's why we have Mr. Biden. And Mr. Biden, now he's our leader, and we have to back him up. That's what I understand. And also, you know, about
where
music.
Where do you understand that from?
What?
That we have that we have to support him because he's our leader.
Oh, because the Bible says, pray for your leader so we can have peace. And I read that about a year and a half ago, and I didn't think to write it down, but I read it myself on the Bible. I read it myself, and I didn't write it. I don't know where I got it from, John or the apostle. I don't know where I got it, but I read it myself, and it said, pray for your leader so you can have peace. And so we have to back him up because it's too late to fire him or whatever because he's our leader now, and we have to back him up because the Bible says that. And I pray for him every day, and I pray for all the leaders of the world.
What
and I
do
pray
you
for the
pray
rest
for
of
him?
I pray that we can all obey God's laws and commands, and our leaders should. To help us so we can have a good life. And I pray for him, and I pray for all the leaders of the world because we're supposed to do that, you know. And I forgot, I probably didn't pray back there, you know, but I read it about a year and a half ago in the Bible, and I didn't think about where I got it, you know. I think it was John the Apostle, because there's John, the other John, you know, that baptized Jesus. But anyways, I don't know, but also about music, you know, way back there, I would, you know, get the radio, and every time I would see, most of the music is good, but then there would be a song with bad words, so I would shut it down and then come back to the same station and listen to it and shut it down, and I would give it three chances, because, you know, we should listen to music with family, you know, family kind of music. That, and it can be good. There's a lot of music that has good words, and there's a lot. And most of the music is beautiful, but the words, you have to watch the words. And I don't know. I have a little list here, but
a list.
Like,
of what?
Oh yeah, the message. Well, of things that I won't forget to mention, but you know. I think that's about it. I don't know. I have a little list here, but I think it's about it. Also, you know, we have to take care of the children, because, you know, you call the children kids, and you know, they probably feel like they're less, and we probably feel like they're less because they're kids. You know, if they call them kids, and really, the man is right. We should call children children. And they probably feel really good, and we'll feel really good. And
wait, I don't understand. What does this mean? So
yes,
if we call the children kids
instead of
if we call them children instead of kids, because if we call them kids, why is that bad?
Well, this man in the media, he said. Because a kid is a calf. It's in a calf, like a cow, a small a cow, I don't know.
It's and a he's goat. Got a calf. It's a baby goat.
A calf. I don't know what it is, but it's I thought it was like maybe, well, something like that. Yeah, and so I believe he's right. And I believe the children will feel, you know, like really happy because, I don't know, calling them kids, you know, that man is right. And also siblings, instead of brothers and sisters, I don't know if it was the same man, because it was around that time and another day or days, and he said, don't call them siblings, call them brothers and sisters. And I don't know.
Why don't call them that? What is it?
Yeah, don't call them siblings. Call them brothers and sisters. Because
I know you're repeating what the guy told you, but why? Why do that? Yeah. What is the reason to do that?
Well, because he said that it makes the family less important. Instead of calling them brothers and sisters, you call them siblings, or you call them kids. And he's right. I don't know if it was the same person, but it's about a year and a half ago. And I've been passing that when I can't, passing it to
passing it around to people
family.
Just to help them so they... Yeah. Is it making a difference? Have you noticed the incidence of people using the word kid and sibling has reduced?
I don't visit my family that much, you know, but the thing is that, I think it did help that they didn't complain when I said it. They did not complain, and they were saying kids a lot. And so,
does your family ever say you're cuckoo or anything like that? Do they ever say anything?
I'm kind of different. I'm kind of different, but you know, I'm not perfect. I'm not perfect.
Well, no, I didn't think you were, but how do they say you're different?
I want to be. Well, you know, about perfect, you know, the Bible, and I read it myself too, but I don't know what word it is. It says, be perfect like my father's perfect. You probably heard of that one in the Bible. It says, be perfect in the front. And we can be perfect. I thought we couldn't be perfect, but we can, because Jesus himself said it, be perfect like my father's perfect. So, I don't know. But, you know, I think I wish God, in my opinion, I wish God would come now, but things are so bad. I think he's waiting for everybody to be good so he can come. Because not everybody's going to die. Not everybody's going to die. Some people are going to be alive when Jesus comes. And I wish our time, it would be our time. But things are so bad, you know. And I'm trying to be good myself.
I have a buddy named Ray Briers, and he owns a company called The Pipe Yard, Inc., INC.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it. Rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe pile, sign pole, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com, 409-788-PIPE, 409-788-PIPE. For years, I've been bragging on the team at Allied Outdoor Solutions in Houston for the beautiful work they do to make your outdoor area, your backyard, look like a resort. Well, their business has just grown and grown organically because they do great work. Your walkways, the area around your pool, your outdoor kitchen, all of that. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. And now, over the years, it's taken 20 years, they're now in Austin, Dallas, and San Antonio. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com, 844-846-1010. Call them at 844-846-1010. My big health focus has been drink more water, get basic exercise, reduce your stress, and perhaps most important, better sleep and more sleep. You don't want to lay in bed where you can't sleep. I use TheTrustedLab.com. TheTrustedLab.com comes directly to your home. I don't want to be involved with addictive drugs and medicine and all that. Completely healthy, completely natural, and I get results. TheTrustedLab.com.
It's that time.
Time.
Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
I think I'm any smarter than the next guy. We all have our area of expertise, and we all have our areas where we're passionate. And where you're passionate, you tend to be more curious. You don't halfway learn about and perfect your skill set in what you're passionate about. For instance, my son Michael T is passionate about computers and Apple products. And so if I have a question about my phone or my iPad or my computer, they're all Apple products, I ask him and he solves the problem immediately. He has a vast knowledge of all things Apple because he reads about it, he studies about it. Well, no teacher has to assign him homework in that subject. Nobody has to remind him to study that. He does it on his own time because he's interested in it. Well, that may be you with old cars, or it may be you with scrapbooking or quilting or sports or any number of other things. So I say all that to say this. I am very interested in how we spend the few minutes we're walking this earth. And it has led me to one branch of thought related to how much time are how we spend our time and how much time we spend doing things we don't enjoy. Well, look, if you're having to go for cancer treatments because you have cancer, you can't control whether you did that. I mean, I guess you could, but you're doing it because you have to. But I find that we spend so much time doing things we don't enjoy because we don't know how to say no. The inability to say no is one of the hardest character traits, and I would say it's a character flaw, that most people suffer. And the truth is, if it weren't for my wife, I probably would have never developed the skill myself. You can say to my wife, would y'all like to come and do X? And she'll say, no. Because realistically, that's not something that we would prefer to do than what we're otherwise going to do. Well, most people have been conditioned to believe that that's rude, right? That it's rude to simply say no to would you like to come and do, would you like to have lunch or whatever else. So we're conditioned to say, so we don't want to say no because that, again, would be rude, and that's what we're taught. Okay. So instead, we say yes. Would you like to come and sit at my table that I bought at the gala to raise money for my kid's school or cancer or something else? Inside, you're thinking, that sounds like a terrible way to spend an evening. But on the outside, you don't know how to say no. So you say yes. And then you dread the fact that your tuxedo doesn't fit. And you're not going to go rent a tuxedo because you bought a tuxedo. And if you didn't buy a tuxedo, now you're going to have to go rent a tuxedo. And then when you're stuffed into that thing like a sausage, you're going to be asking yourself the question, why on earth do people hold black tie events? I've never met a guy, no dude that I've ever known, has thought to themselves, man, pretty excited, we're going to be going black tie. Because you got to put that thing around your neck, and it never feels good. Oh, it's terrible. I wore a tie every day as a baby lawyer. Every day for years. So much so that when I left law, well, I wore it as a lawyer. Then when I left that, I went into real estate, and I wore a coat and tie every day as well. And wingtips, because that's what you did. My dad went to a plant. He wore, you know, the plant gear. And he sent me off to make something of myself, and that meant wearing a coat and tie because that's the uniform of the successful. That's what I believed. And as a baby lawyer, that's what I did. And then in real estate, I didn't have to do that, but I did. And I was baby faced back then. And so I was always kind of too young to be in the room, and I wanted to be taken seriously. So, you know, the suit made me, you know, look, may or feel a little older, project what you want to, you know, based on how you're dressed. Well, then I went into politics, and I felt like to be taken seriously as a young politician, I need to be dressed the right. When I came into radio, I wore a coat and a tie, a dress shirt and a tie, and a jacket every single day for a couple of years. And then I slowly but surely realized, you don't have to do that anymore. And you now have the confidence that, you know, this isn't, you don't need that anymore. Let's leave it at that. Well, back to the black tie. I don't understand why anybody does it. I really don't. And I hear from so many people that get stuck, and maybe it's just my social circle, going to black tie events that they don't want to go to, but they didn't say no. Or people will tell me how busy they are, and they're just too busy to get their work done. And it's sort of like making people unload their wallet for me and realize they have too much junk in their wallet. It's one of my charming or not so charming little things I do is I ask people, all right, let's go through a day. Pull out your calendar. And, oh, I got this meeting with so-and-so I don't want to have. Well, why are you having it? I don't know. I should have said no. Learn to say no. Because by not saying no, you're going to spend a lot of time. So-and-so invites you to lunch because y'all are at an event together. And the only thing people know to say when they're feeling awkward is, we should get together for lunch. And the other person should say, sure, sometime about 2100 or so. But instead, they go, okay, all right, what does your calendar look like for next Tuesday? Well, let's be honest. That guy doesn't enjoy your company. If they did, that'd be a fun lunch, and you wouldn't be dreading it. If it was just two guys getting together to shoot the bull, talk about what's going on in your life, talk about your shared joys, you wouldn't mind that. You mind it because you know the guy's going to make a pitch. Deep down, you know he's going to ask you to donate to his kid's school or a fundraiser or a political event that he's committed to or some other multi-level marketing. He's going to try to sell you some service or product that he gets paid. But we're going to pretend we're buddies first, and then at some point he's going to make the pitch. And you're going to wish you weren't there at that moment. Because just like you can't say no to the meeting, now you're struggling to say no to the pitch. And now you're going to end up buying something you don't want or committing to be at another event that you don't want. Because he's got a mission here. He's got to sign you up. And you don't know how to say no. Your inability to say no has gone from now you're at a meeting you don't want to be at, to you're committed to coming to an event where you got to bring a check for a cause and you would have rather just mailed the check in the first place. So most meetings could be reduced to an email. Think about every meeting you go to. You got the time spent getting there. I live in a big city with a lot of traffic. It's 30 minutes to get anywhere. You got the time spent going back. So there's an hour total. You got the time spent, one of you's early, one of you's late. You got the, if you're early, you're the person waiting. All that time is wasted. Then you got all the conversation at the lunch, because y'all aren't really friends, let's be honest. You got all the conversation at the lunch that's other than them making the pitch with someone who, truthfully, you really don't even like. I know, I sound like a complete ass. But here's why I tell you this. Because if you learn to say no, people ask me all the time, how do you get it all done? You do so many things, and you never miss your kids' events, and you take your family to dinner, and you still... You read all these articles, and you talk to all these interesting people. Because I don't do things I don't want to do, right? And you've been taught that makes you a bad person. Well, if it makes me a bad person, fine. Successful people control their time. We all have exactly the same number of minutes on this earth. Control how you spend yours.
And so I just put that on the Michael Berry Show.
Michael Berry Show.
I realize what I just said won't sit well with some people, and that's okay. The old you can't handle the truth, one of Nicholson's finest. It's true. A lot of people can't handle the truth. So you have to decide if you want to be popular or nice, or if you want to tell the truth. Wasn't that what's the goofy guy that just twists his face, contorts his face all the time? Jim Carrey movie? Yes, man. What was it called? Yes, man. And I haven't seen the movie because I think the guy's an idiot. But as I understand it, he's not able to lie. That's a concept that's been used at multiple times where someone who's unable to tell a lie, and even a white lie, how funny that turns out to be, which really kind of exposes how many lies we tell in a day, right? When your wife says, "Does this dress make me look fat?" You better learn pretty darn fast how you're supposed to answer that. Right? Do you find her sister attractive? You better learn pretty fast. And if you don't know, you should figure it out fast, because that's a hard lesson if you don't. But I posted something to Facebook earlier today because it's been on my mind. That's why I just spoke about it in the last segment. And I got a lot of emails saying, thank you for posting that. I'm going to share it. And I decided, well, if people really appreciated it that much, maybe, just maybe, I should devote a segment to it. And I did a minute ago without meaning to. But I'm going to read to you what I wrote. There's some repetition because it's been on my mind today. Do with this what you want. And if you really like it, then share from the podcast. Share this with all your friends, all your employees, hopefully your boss who keeps calling stupid meetings. Here goes. A few reminders.
I have a buddy named Ray Briers, and he owns a company called The Pipe Yard Inc., INC.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it. Rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe piles, sign poles, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com, 409-788-PIPE, 409-788-PIPE. Your car breaks down over time, and so do we. Your joints ache. It's hard getting old. We know this. The TrustedLab.com helps me. I lead a more active lifestyle than I ever have, and I feel better than ever. Delivered to my doorstep, completely legal, lab-tested CBD, TrustedLab.com, based right here in Texas. TheTrustedLab.com.
Since I keep encountering folks who've apparently never heard my vital rules to live by. Number one, never hold a meeting that could have been an email. It wastes time to get to the meeting, more time to get everyone there at the same time. Some people can't be there at that time, and be more productive being somewhere else at that time. People won't remember half what you said, whereas an email can be consulted later and kept for years. Finally, your ideas will be better conveyed when you deliberate over your words and reduce them to writing. Number two, you don't have to have your calendar full every single minute to seem busy or important or to justify your job. If you do, you're an idiot, or your boss is, or both. Number three, most of the meetings you're calling are related to not having understood rule number two, above. Consult it again and stop calling meetings. Number four, meetings should be limited to 15 minutes in almost all cases. Anything more than that's a waste of time. We don't need to hear what you did this weekend, or pleasantries, or icebreakers, or anything else. Don't wander in your thoughts. People have other things to do. Prepare for the meeting by writing down what you're going to say. Listen carefully to this. Prepare for the meeting. If you're the one who calls the meeting, prepare for the meeting by writing down what you're going to say, rather than just rambling and wasting the time of your meeting victims. Take those notes you just wrote down to prepare for the meeting, send them to all the meeting captives in an email, and then cancel the meeting. You just became very popular. Number five, you can say no to a meeting request. Stop taking meetings because you're too weak, which you couch as being too nice, to say no. They waste time to get to. One of you's late, and that wastes time for the other. They fill as much time as allotted. Lunch, for instance, is way too long for a simple, can you contribute to this fundraiser I'm committed to raising money for? That's a simple sentence, not the 2 hours it takes to drive there and back and eat, because that's really why they invited you to lunch, to pitch you on a fundraiser that they're raising money for, that they have to raise money and you're hot on their list. I could go on and on for a while with this. No, I don't want to meet you unless it's social. And that's why we'll be meeting. I do that a lot. That's fun. Not to, quote, discuss some things. Make them tell you up front. What are we going to discuss? Otherwise, it's a pitch. And you can just make up your excuse by email. Because you're going to make up an excuse if you don't go. And if you can't think of an excuse fast enough, you get stuck in a meeting you don't want to be at. Back to the story. I study highly successful people, and I try to be one myself. Highly successful people get more done in the same 24 hours as the rest of us because they have strategies and they execute them. For instance, how many meetings do you take simply because you're at an event and someone says, we should get together, when really they just want to sell you something and you know you don't want to buy it, but the only way you know to say no is if you have a conflict. So you pull out your phone and pray for a conflict to appear during that date and time. Or you do the, quote, I need to check with my wife or my husband or my boss to see if we have plans. Because you want out of this. You want to say no. I have an easy excuse. This is me personally. Number one, I can't do breakfast because I'm at the studio. I do a morning show as well as the evening show. Number two, I can't do lunch because of my intermittent fasting, and I only eat at night. Number three, I can't do dinner because evenings are for my family. Simple. Now, this message is not for everyone. Many of you are retired and don't have these pressures on your time. If it doesn't apply to you, you may think me rude or selfish. Both are true. I am. But the reward for this stingy sharing of my time is that it frees me up to read more, to think more, to exercise more, to socialize with friends more, and to never miss a moment of my kids' lives. There's an opportunity cost to wasting time, and holding or attending meetings is often a waste of time. And there are victims. It's a bit of a stretch, but you get my point. that you can't make your daughter's volleyball game or your son's baseball game because of work is actually often due to being behind on doing work because of meetings where everyone talks about work. You leave the meeting to rush and do the work about which the meeting was only talking. Anyway, a few random thoughts that may help a person or two. Being successful, however you measure that, usually means living your life by your standards, not giving in to the demands and expectations of others. Success can be as simple as having more control of your time to spend on the things you love. A tough no moment in response to a meeting request can yield an extra 2 hours to take your wife to an unexpected lunch, which turns out to be a real big treat for her. Enjoy. And let me say this. There's nothing selfish or narcissistic or egomaniacal about having a strategy for how you're going to spend your time and your energy. Other people will tell you they do, because other people are about the niceties of life. But guess what? Being nice to Bob by taking a meeting with him because he wants to sell you something necessarily means being emotionally, or even in some cases physically, unavailable for your son or daughter for their sporting event or for the event at school. It might mean missing out on watching a television show you like to watch or getting exercise, which your future self will thank you for. Look, I don't care if you think I'm a nice guy or not, because I turn people down for meetings. And why can't I just be nice? Listen, a lot of people have a job, and that is to sell you on things. And Americans are the best salesmen there are. People around the world hire us to train their sellers because our sellers are good at what they do. And when somebody first gets into insurance or multi-level marketing, they first attack the people around them. And they want to sell, sell, sell. And you don't want to say no because you hope, you know, so-and-so does well for themselves. And that's okay. Take one of those meetings, but don't take them all. And don't take meetings because you don't know how to say no. And in fact, live your life the way you want to. Because highly successful people, whether it be sports, business, or anywhere else, are people who take those same 24 hours and use them more wisely. And I don't mean successful being rich, necessarily. I mean successful being happy, because you're doing what you want to do.
The Michael Berry Show.
Ooh, Michael Berry.
Shirley Q. Liquor, honey. I'm just so disgusted with myself. You know, I was going to try to quit them cigarettes for my New Year resolution. I got this nicotine patch that you get down here at Walmart. And I'm going to tell you, them things don't work at all. Just save your money. I'm going to keep on enjoying my cigarettes, honey. You know, that just ain't nothing as good as taking a long drag after your big, hot, steaming bowl of greens and a pitcher of cherry Kool-Aid shoes. Now, I tried real hard using patches, you know, to quit smoking. They just don't work, honey. You know, they taste terrible. And they won't stay lit no matter what you do. Then my oldest girl gonna tell me you're just supposed to put that patch on yourself, you know. But they don't make one for colored people. Them all is some white people patches. I tried one of them on, but it looked like my friend that got burned. Big old one white patch hanging out. Oh, well, I'm just going to keep smoking. It's so good, I love it. You tell your mama, ask her how she doing. Tell her she need to buy her own cigarettes.
I know a lot of Kiss fans don't like this song because this is Kiss selling out. Disco was big at the time. Wish you wouldn't play that, Michael. That's when Kiss sold out. Arenas. Yeah. Yeah, this was their biggest played song. Because guess what? Chicks control whether a couple goes to a concert or not. That's why all the great rock bands, not all, while many of the great rock bands actually become chick bands, because that's who decides what concert the couple's going to. REO Speedwagon would jam your head off, and then they became a sappy love song band. Chicago, that was an instrumentalist band, and they brought in that goober Peter Cetera and ruined it. Who's the other one? Foreigner. Journey. Although I don't think they ruined it because, I mean, I think Journey's love songs are, even I have to admit, those are solid. Steve Perry's vocals. And now that little Vietnamese dude. You know, it drives Chad crazy when I say he's Vietnamese. Oh, he's in a bad mood today. Never mind. He's Filipino. In fact, I know his name. I knew his name at some point. But anyway, back to the issue. If I can help you begin to understand that you have choices as to how to live your life, and you're not restricted by what you believed were the rules, because we're all playing by different rules, but taking the same journey. And you don't necessarily have to go the long route. A shortcut's not necessarily a bad thing if you're not cheating. A shortcut might be easier. Walk on the pavement instead of the uneven dirt. Easier on your feet and your ankles and your back if you have an option. So with that in mind, I want to ask you, and once you've done it, I hope you'll send me an email later tonight or in the morning. I want to ask you to spend a few moments on you. I know, touchy-feely, right? Well, it's serious because that's what I do. And people often ask me how I get so much done in my life. And why I'm always in such a good mood and why I'm always so happy. I'm happy because I do the things that give me great joy, that give my life meaning, and that will last far beyond my lifetime. And that is time with family, time with friends, and time on me. Now, time on me might be reading articles or watching documentaries that help me be a better show host. But because I love what I do, which we've talked about before, because I love what I do, then spending time getting better at what I do is not work. It's not a burden. It's not difficult. I don't mind doing it. The things I mind doing I mind cutting the grass. So I made enough money in my life that I can pay someone else to do that, because I don't want to do it. And I don't want to wash my car. And I don't want to change my oil. So I spend a lot of time on my day job so I don't have to do that. Well, people can be very judgmental. And they'll say, oh, you're not a common man. You don't. Well, you have so much time to wash your own car and cut your own grass because you don't work as many hours as I do. And guess what? You'll find yourself a whole lot happier when you stop caring what the neighbors think that you hired someone to cut your grass or wash your car and just spent more time on you, even if that means working more hours or being better at what you do. Spend some time focusing on the life you want to live and actually having a strategy, and then execute it. And don't let anybody take you off track.
Something nice? You can always say it on the Michael Berry.
Lesbian bar shuts down 1 week after grand opening because it wasn't woke enough. It's true. And this, by the way, this is how you know there are certain people who aren't happy unless they're unhappy. This is the global warming crowd. This is the mask wearing crowd, the quote unquote vaccine crowd. This is the racist crowd. You know, everything is racist. You'll never give them enough. Okay. This is a transgender crowd. It never stops. So here we are. Lesbian bar shuts down 1 week after grand opening because it wasn't woke enough. The bar is called Doc Marie's. Doc Marie's is a lesbian bar that opened with the hope of bringing more inclusivity to the city of Portland. But just 1 week after their grand opening, they were forced to shut down because of complaints that the bar was not a safe space. Similar to the story we wrote weeks ago, by the way, this is all from Weasel Zippers. Similar to the story we wrote weeks ago about the queer-owned cafe in Philadelphia that was shut down by employees for not being woke enough, Doc Marie's was cannibalized by the woke mob. The crowd on opening day was huge. One woman said that the line for entry for opening night was, quote, wrapped around the block with literally 200 lesbians waiting to get in. But the excitement about a new progressive hangout dissipated quickly. Within days, Doc Marie's found itself on the receiving end of accusations of not being inclusive enough for trans people and people of color. Despite mask mandates being lifted in Portland, patrons accused the bar of not implementing enough COVID safety measures. Patrons also claimed that Doc Marie's had culturally appropriative art on the walls. Oh my goodness. One TikToker who says she attended the grand opening, employees of Doc Marie's created an Instagram page to echo these concerns. They claimed that the owners were not proactive enough in creating a safe space and accused the owners of racism. The employees also demanded that the bar host free opportunities for education for the community. Here's what they posted. We, the Marie Aki Workers Collective, hereafter MEWC or MUC, are composed of the current employees of Doc Marie's. We only speak for ourselves, not of ownership of the bar. This is the only social media account affiliated with our group. We felt misled about the space being safe and welcoming. Our vision is a queer worker-owned cooperative that is ran democratically, provides mutual aid, and hosts free opportunities for education to our community. They continue. Yesterday, we presented a list of demands, including owner resignation and relinquishing stake to workers, which as of 7 p.m. on 7/4/22 have not been acknowledged despite being passed the agreed upon 24-hour deadline. So now they've demanded that the owners of the bar give them the bar and leave. This is a hostage situation. These are our demands. They must be met within 24 hours. Or what? So then the bar owners come back. We hear you and we are taking steps to ensure that we can carry out our mission of being a proud, safe, and inclusive space for our community. We will be posting updates on our action plan shortly, as well as a timeline for reopening. Thank you. So they surrendered to the woke mob. They pandered to the woke mob. And now it's not enough. Eventually, every revolution turns on itself. These people will never stop. You see, the screaming and hollering, the demanding and trampling, that is what they want. That's not the process to get what they want. That's what they want. Give them an inch, they'll take a mile and demand 10 more. It will never stop. The best thing you can do is put up a wall. The minute it starts, shut it down. We're not sitting down. We're not hearing you out. We're not listening to you. We're not compromising. We're not accommodating. No, get out. That's it. This is a lesbo bar. That's it. We're not doing anything else for you. We're not a lesbo bar that panders to blacks. We're not a lesbo bar for dudes that want to be girls. We're just a lesbo bar. We're just a lesbo bar. And that kind of makes me think of our favorite lesbian of all time, the assistant manager at Dairy Queen, Big Chiffon. Here's to her.
You know, this morning I was thinking about this big old girl, big woman, used to be the assistant manager over here at the Dairy Queen. You remember her? Name was Chiffon. You remember old Big Chiffon? I remember working down there. Every morning at the crack of dawn, you'd see her arrive by 6'6", 345, big old broad shoulders, big old hips. Everybody know you ain't gave no lip to Miss Chiffon. No, Lord, not to her. She knocked your teeth out. She was tough, Miss Chiffon. Yes, Lord. Nobody seemed to know where she called home. She just drift into town. She stay all alone. She ain't said much. Kind of quiet and shy. And if you spoke at all, you better just say how you doing to Chiffon. Big Chiffon. She didn't like no kind of conversation. Not her, Lord. Big Chiffon. Big old hips on her. Big old woman. Somebody say she come from New Orleans and she got in a big fight with a Cajun queen and a crashing blow from a huge right hand sent a Louisiana to the promised land. That's Chiffon. Criminal convictions, aggravated assault, assistant manager, that's Chiffon. Dairy Queen. But that's just how I remember. I might be wrong. Tell your mama and them I asked her how she doing. Bye, honey.
If you like The Michael Berry Show and podcast, please tell one friend. And if you're so inclined, write a nice review of our podcast. Comments, suggestions, questions, and interest in being a corporate sponsor and partner can be communicated directly to the show at our email address, Michael,
at michaelberryshow.com or simply by clicking on our website, michaelberryshow.com. The Michael Berry Show and podcast is produced by Ramon Robles, the King of Ding. Executive producer is Chad Nakanishi. Brad Gloria is the Baron of Booking for guests and provides voices. Jim Mudd is the creative director. Script writer, parody producer, and Lord of Laughter is Kenny Webster Jr., a.k.a. Producer Kenny. Voices, jingles, tomfoolery, and shenanigans are provided by Chance McLean. Director of Research is Sandy Peterson. Listener and superfan contributions are appreciated and often incorporated into our production. Where possible, we give credit. Where not, we take all the credit for ourselves. God bless the memory of Rush Limbaugh. Long live Elvis. Be a simple man, like Lynyrd Skynyrd told you, and God bless America. Finally, if you know a veteran suffering from PTSD, call Camp Hope at 877-717-PTSD, and a combat veteran will answer the phone to provide free counseling. For years, I've been bragging on the team at Allied Outdoor Solutions in Houston for the beautiful work they do to make your outdoor area, your backyard, look like a resort. Well, their business has just grown and grown organically because they do great work. Your walkways, the area around your pool, your outdoor kitchen, all of that. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. And now, over the years, it's taken 20 years, they're now in Austin, Dallas, and San Antonio. AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com. 844-846-1010. Call them at 844-846-1010. Your car breaks down over time, and so do we. Your joints ache. It's hard getting old. We know this. TheTrustedLab.com helps me. I lead a more active lifestyle than I ever have, and I feel better than ever. Delivered to my doorstep, completely legal, lab-tested CBD, TheTrustedLab.com, based right here in Texas. TheTrustedLab.com.